Hi, it's Lucy, and welcome back to another episode of The Real Girls Club, my podcast where I interview women working in the film industry. In today's episode, I'm joined by the super talented Sophia Hardman. Sophia is a Foley editor and mixer with an incredibly impressive resume and has worked on a ton of major films for the likes of Ridley Scott and Sam Mendes, just to name a few. We talk all about Foley art, sound and film, advice for people interested in Foley, and much more. Ironically, my mic game was on full by accident in this episode, so the sound is not great on my side. Plus, there are a few background noises I hope you can forgive me for. Thank you for listening and enjoy today's episode. Hello? Oh, I can't hear you.
Audio person can't
hear you. Can you hear me? Can I hear you?
I can hear you.
Yay, great. Amazing. I'm quite reassured to know that someone that works in sound forgot to put on their sound button. That reassures me.
Don't worry. We're all part of it. I think this is the first time I've used Zoom in about 2, maybe 3 years.
Oh, okay.
So, it's fine.
Okay, it's fine. It's been a while for you. This is the only way that I do podcast interviews, to be honest. I've done one in real life, so I would say I'm quite good with Zoom, but I still have issues with it. Anyway.
Alright, how are you today?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. Really, really good.
I'm glad.
Day off.
Oh, day off, lovely. But yeah, I'm glad we finally managed to find some time that worked, because it was like back and forth. Although this happens all the time whenever I'm arranging interviews, it's always like back and forth for a good couple of weeks until we're like, okay, we can find a moment.
we can make it work.
Yeah.
Honestly, the first time I had to change, I was so ill. I'm still kind of on the...
Oh yeah, sorry, forgot to ask.
No, it's totally fine. But it was like the murderous flu is the I can describe it. I suddenly just turned into chaos and was just I feel dead. So I'm okay.
Back
alive now, but occasionally I might need to cough. That's the only thing.
That's okay. We can edit those out. It's fine. So where are you based currently?
I'm in Highbury.
Highbury.
London.
Okay, in London. Okay.
Yeah.
I figured that you'd be near, obviously, like London. That's where you mostly work, and at Twickenham Studios.
Twickenham anymore, but I'm freelance now. But I still need to go there occasionally, so it's kind of
okay.
Nice to be able to get there easily.
Yeah, and London kind of is, I mean, not the centre of the universe, but like the centre of the UK. You know, so it's the best place to be for like film work. It shouldn't be, but yeah, I guess it's like where a lot of things happen. Anyway, let's just get started. I have quite a lot of questions, but we'll see what we can get through. And you're okay for time if it's your day off. So like,
I've got no time. No,
but you know, you want your evening off, so I won't go into it.
Yeah.
So let's start by sort of the beginning. What led you to become a Foley editor and mixer? What were your studies and your first experiences in the industry?
So I originally was a musician when I was younger, and I decided that I wanted to kind of follow the music path. And at some point or other, I kind of decided, actually, being behind the consoles, being the person recording them, was far more interesting than actually being a musician. So I decided to pursue that, and I studied at the Liverpool Institute for Performing Arts, which is a wonderful university, and I was kind of heading in the direction of music production, which I loved, but turns out wasn't amazing at it. And
what did you play?
These things kind of. I was a drummer originally.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I kind of, we had this module that was about sound and sound for film and TV, and I think one of the first things they showed us was Foley, and
you were just taken by it.
Whole perception.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. And I was taken by it, and I was totally like, oh, this is something really interesting and totally niche and something I'd never thought about, because, you know, I think as with quite a lot of people, you don't ever really think about what happens with sounds and where the sounds come from films. You just kind of presume that's how they are when they recorded the film, but obviously that's not the case. So it opened up this whole world where I could go, oh wow, I can really focus on this and really kind of bring myself into this world. And I was lucky enough to get an internship at Twickenham Studios in my second year of university, which I did for 4 weeks, which was supposed to be 4 weeks, and then it turned into 4 months.
Wow.
Which was a little fun experience, and I was so lucky at that time, because it was a time when they were doing the first ever Atmos film at Twickenham, and it might have been the UK, I'm not entirely sure. Atmos being a format of audio,
okay,
like surround with height ceiling speakers as well.
I feel like I've seen that somewhere on like a DVD or something. It sounds familiar.
It's becoming more normal. Yeah, it's becoming more of a thing at the moment, but it's still not the regular format that you get in cinemas. 5.1, 7.1 is the normal format, but Atmos is a real experience. I would recommend going and listening to something in Atmos. But it was the first film that Twickenham were doing in Atmos called Exodus: Gods and Kings.
Mm-hmm.
So as an intern in my second year of university, going into my third year, I got to experience that film being mixed in Atmos and being an assistant on the stage and being around the director, the producers, the sound editors, all of these people. It was like trial by fire, learning everything at once, like very little sleep, so much excitement, quite a lot of beer. And I kind of came out the end of that and was like, this is it for me. This is exactly what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I want to work in film sound. I wasn't entirely sure about Foley. I wasn't entirely sure about, like, you know, dialogue, effects, re-recording, mixing, but I was so sure that it was film sound that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I got my start. And then at the end of my third year, I actually got offered a job by Twickenham after my 4 months.
That's so lucky. Wow.
So honestly, like I managed to miss the whole runner part of...
Yeah, that's usually how people might have to start.
Yeah, so I skipped that little step, that really horrible step that quite a lot of people do not enjoy, which was very lucky. And I went in straight as a sound assistant.
Wow, that's like, the dream situation, how it just all snowballed.
It snowballed. I mean, I can't lie, my internship was pretty exhausting and, made a lot of, like, mistakes, made a lot of really good contacts, made a lot of, like, experiences, so... I had this like trial by fire experience that did a lot for me and I'm so grateful for it. But and then skipping like a year of being a runner, delightful.
Amazing. Do you come from a background of people in film and arts and sound, like your family, are they creative, or your friends, like the sort of people you surround yourself with?
No, so my family are, bless them, not from a creative background at all.
I mean, it's not obligatory, just curious.
It's not obligatory, no. But it's totally, they're from a totally different background. My mum's she's Venezuelan. She moved to this country with my dad. And my dad is from this country, but he is also he does like project management. And my mum has had lots of jobs, but lastly worked in the fire service. So, you know, like very different, more like...
But very cool parents, they sound cool.
Very cool, but very much like the more like straightforward career path.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, they were super supportive of me going into creative arts, which was amazing.
That's great, yeah.
But yeah, very, very much not what they were expecting or that they knew exactly how to deal with, you know.
Mm-hmm. So can you sort of walk... I jumped the question. If you see me glancing over, I'm looking at my phone because I've got the memory of a fish, so I have to like have everything written down.
Don't worry about it, I would do the same.
If you were to explain to someone who doesn't know what Foley involves, how would you describe it to them?
Okay, so Foley, first of all, is the art of replacing sounds and creating sounds that might be human, created by animals, created by aliens. It could be a mix of anything. So a usual way that I would describe it is like, we will do every single bit of footsteps that you see. Anytime someone moves and picks up something, for example, a glass, a shake someone's hand, they knock over a table, they have a fight, they battle an alien.
What is this film?
There's so many different types of films that could have everything. I've just brought up a brilliant idea for a film.
Yeah, aliens having a fight in a pub or something.
And then down to the minutiae of someone's cloth moving on their coat. You know, so we'll do every single sound you could possibly imagine. If someone has a plant in front of them and they just knock it gently, we'll try and get this little foliage texture going on.
Mm-hmm.
So we as in the Foley people, consist of Foley artists. So those are the people that perform and create the sounds. And they work with Foley mixers directly. Foley mixers being someone who records and manipulates the sound using microphones and plugins and preamps and different techniques to get something that matches potentially the sound of the set, or potentially something more stylized if that's what is requested for the project. And then lastly, the other person that's involved is the Foley editor. And so what they do is they take what the artist and the mixer has been working on in the studio together, and they put it into perfect sync. So mm-hmm. they're syncing it up with the picture and any effects guides that we might have been given. So to create that final finished polished piece, and then the editor will take it to another level and do any noise reduction, any refining, any panning, so taking off screen, taking it around the room kind of thing, and any EQs and final like kind of finishing touches to make it sit really nice mm-hmm. and polish it up.
This might sound like a stupid question, and it just came up. Why is the sound not recorded? Like, why is the sound not used from the like filming? Why has it got to be put on afterwards?
So when they're filming, the priority is to capture the dialogue mm-hmm. and the performance. So if someone's got, fantastically clippy heels on their shoes, because it's a character trait that they sound really scary and really like, quite a badass, but that's going to get in the way of their dialogue when they're walking down the corridor.
Okay.
9 times out of 10, what they'll do is on those scenes where you don't see the shoes, they'll put carpet on those shoes or they'll change the shoes, so we don't hear it when they're recording the dialogue directly. Mm-hmm. But then afterwards, we will add that character through our performance in the Foley studio. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. So would you have like guidelines then afterwards when you're editing, like add this sound here, like otherwise, because if you didn't, it was...
I mean, so 9 times out of 10, they do lots of like, say if it is someone walking down a corridor and it would just be, it'd be like a close up shot, it's on their shoulder, you see them walking down a corridor, but then there would probably be a cut to their feet or a wide shot where you can see, and those moments will either use those visual cues to go, right, okay, so that's what they're trying to do, or we'll use our brains and be like, well, this person, we've seen the show, this person is a bit of a baddie, maybe we want them to sound kind of heavy and weighty, mm-hmm. and we'll make these decisions as we go on the Foley stage, where we're trying to tell the story through sound as well as what you see on screen. So mm-hmm. we'll make decisions after watching it, which might not necessarily be the perfect decisions, but we're trying to give a like perfect in the sense of like the most accurate in terms of what they actually shot on the day, but we're trying to give a sense of style and character to every performance. Mm-hmm. So the goodie sounds sharp and they sound really like attacking and high energy, and then the baddie kind of sounds slow and sluggish, so they sound a bit more weighty in a different way. Mm-hmm. We can make these choices through choices of shoes and through the mixer using different techniques. We're trying to consider what the character needs, but then also if it's a shot where you've got several characters all at once, we don't want it to sound like a herd of elephants, like hundreds of feet going on at the same time. So it might make decisions where we'll only record maybe 2 or 3 tracks of feet, even though there's 20 people in a scene, because you want to just bring focus to the people that we're actually listening to. Mm-hmm. Or if we're trying to create a sense of chaos, we'll record big tracks where it's just everyone scuffing around, mm-hmm. and we'll do lots and lots of layers. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of a balance of focusing on what we see on screen and what the story's trying to portray, and listening to how the edit has been done, the picture edit has been done. So if they're focusing microphone-wise on what they've selected in their microphones in the picture edit is on the 2 lead characters and it's a wide shot with loads of people in it, then maybe we do only just want to hear them.
What I'm really interested to know as well is what kind of objects and props are commonly used in the sound department?
Oh, I mean, I think Foley has this perception that we use all sorts of like silly props to recreate normal sounds. But in fact, I find it's kind of quite the opposite. There are some little bits and bobs, but generally speaking, Foley studios have these props rooms that are mad places that have everything you would see ever. Just like, we've got like hundreds of plates and glasses, and then different types of chairs and cushions and dresses and like different car parts. Like we have everything in. So I would say if I was to narrow it down onto what are the most commonly used things, I would say paper, mobile phones, I'd say cloth, vegetables, and shoes. That's a silly one to miss. Shoes.
Shoes. Yeah, you did mention shoes earlier quite a lot.
Yes. Shoes being used because of Foley artists usually turn up to a Foley studio with multiple pairs of shoes in order to provide different kind of traits to a character so they can choose, you know, if we're doing, they don't necessarily know when they rock up to a Foley studio what we're doing that day. We might be doing a period drama where you need like really high class sounding polished high heels. They need to do a war film. It might be all boots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be a football show and it's all football boots. You know, there's all of these different things. So they just need to be prepared for everything.
So you just nab them all from the costume department then?
Oh, I wish.
Maybe not. No.
I would never do that. No,
yeah, no, that probably wouldn't work.
They don't want to give costume away, really, sadly. If anyone wants to give me costume, I'll take it. But, no, we do a lot of charity shopping.
Oh.
To so find.
Interesting.
As much, like, not, we don't want to, because also, you don't want to buy brand new things.
Well, yeah.
It's wasteful.
Mm-hmm.
But also, shoes tend to sound better, in my opinion, when they've been lived in a bit.
Yeah, that's true. You yeah. know,
they have a bit more natural sound to them. They've got a bit mm-hmm. more character. So, you know, or going to an Oxfam or a charity, any kind of charity shop, you get. Mm.
I wouldn't have thought that there was like a buying side to the job as well, a shopping side.
There is definitely. There's a lot of shopping, a lot of vegetable shopping.
Just going down the supermarket while you're doing your food shop. I'll just put that in for, you know, work.
Need a quick cabbage.
It is famously like known that they use like was it one of like David Lynch's films, he famously used like a watermelon for like Nicolas Cage's someone else's head in Wild at Heart.
Yes, so yeah, very much that kind of thing. We tend to use cabbages, like tight you know, those tight packed cabbages for like head smashes.
Lovely.
Celery. Being celery is like the jack of all trades, I would say, in terms of gore.
Snapping.
You know, you can twist it. Yeah, it sounds like snapping. It can, you twist it very slowly. You get all this kind of crunchy gore sound.
Mm.
Oranges and pak choy being perfect sounds, you know, visceral sounds that you can create with them.
And then paper, what's that used for, other than the sound of paper?
Every person on any TV show is genuinely writing or flapping a paper around for a constant amount of time
during
a film or a TV show. It's like a constant thing.
I don't know the actual name for it, but like for thunder, like those metal
boards. Thunder sheets, yeah. Metal sheets, yeah. That's such a theatrical Foley, a theatre Foley type of thing.
Ah, okay.
To do like thunder. But yeah, on those kind of, on more film and TV type Foley, you don't find thunder sheets so much, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, true. I mean, it probably doesn't have enough impact for, like, a film.
No, and the sound effects teams always have an amazing array of fantastic recordings from libraries and stuff.
So. Yeah, that makes sense. What kind of props objects would somebody be surprised to know that you use, aside from the commonly used ones?
I mean, there's. I think being honest with you, everything's a bit of a surprise if you walk into a Foley studio. It's just a bit of a like confusing mess. It's like someone's house, but with everything that's ever existed.
Were some objects that have been used not what you hoped for, and you had to like change direction at the last minute?
I think when you're doing something that's kind of got to sound quite big, for example, like a metal, like footsteps on metal, or you know, like big car crashy kind of ad sounds. We're not doing actual car crashes, but like these kind of metal twangs that we're going to add to these scenes. I think those scenes can be quite hard to just get right with one thing, for example. So if you were like doing a car crash, if you just had like a car door, it wouldn't necessarily sound big enough if you're just like kind of hitting it really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So we might need to get lots of different pieces of metal and boxes involved to imply size. We can do that by layering lots of things up, doing lots of takes, or we can kind of do a bit of a like health and safety nightmare puzzle of like balancing lots of metal on each other so that when you kind of bang them all together, they create this big, wonderful ricocheting effect of metal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think it's quite often that we can't get the sound with just the original, you know, element that you might be trying to achieve, but we'll take that one element and expand it and create a huge sound involving that sound so you get a sense of it, but also size around it.
Mm-hmm. So going on from that, I mean, that sounds a bit, well, maybe not risky, but yeah.
It is a little bit risky.
With all these various objects and things, what would you say some of the challenges are that are unique to your role, and how do you overcome them?
I think some of the challenges, particularly with Foley mixing, I think is teamwork and communication. And I think it's a real interesting challenge that I think is overlooked, is that realistically in a Foley studio, it's the mixer and an artist, that's it, working together 8 hours a day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to constructively give feedback, give instructions, take feedback, and, you know, work together in a room with no windows and lots of silly props. You know, it's like...
Sounds like Big Brother.
It is a little bit. It's like a little social experiment. And I think you need to be able to portray your ideas clearly and, you know, potentially give feedback that might be hard to hear if someone's just given a performance. You need to be able to constructively work together and create something that you're both proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing that on a project where you're working for 4 weeks straight, you need to be able to communicate really clearly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges and one of the best challenges about it, I think, because you work with someone so closely that you develop a fantastic relationship that's, you know, like so key that every sound you're proud of when you finish it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really amazing part of being a mixer for me anyway. And then in regards to editing, I think the challenges that are involved in that is being extremely focused and extremely meticulous in your choices and your decision making, because when it's coming off the stage, when they've been recording it on the Foley stage, you have maybe been given several options for footsteps, for example. And we, as editors, have to make decisions and be, you know, really scrupulous on what we send off to the clients from that point. So mm-hmm. I think being as meticulous and thorough as possible is probably one of the biggest challenges, and not losing that kind of focus and that energy to keep going again and again and again.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing, every day in, day out, it's a little bit kind of like mentally draining, as is every job, but it's the focus is mm-hmm. the importance is to keep going back to that focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you say, if you're in like a darkened room with no windows, you come out at the end of the day and you're like, oh my god, daylight. You feel like you've been in a I don't know, it's like when you go to the cinema, basically you come out into the world and you're a bit like dissociated at first,
and that every day 8 hours a day, it's a lot to kind mm-hmm. of, I think it's quite a challenge to make sure that you keep coming back fresh and refresh.
Mm-hmm. You've really got to have a love for it then, and a motivation to want to come back in every day and do it again mm-hmm. until it's done.
Absolutely. I think Foley has the reputation, or Foley teams have the reputation of being a bit weird, and a bit kind of a bit out there, because we do spend such a small amount, like a long amount of time, in these enclosed spaces with loads of weird props and just being like, oh, I've got a great idea, let's try this. So I think it probably does have the reputation of just being a bit like out there and a bit weird.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah, someone's got to do it, and we love it.
Yeah, and it sounds fun. It sounds really fun, to be honest. Just like playing all day, especially with all like the different objects and props. And to be honest, all editing sort of jobs, I mean, even like just the film editor has to spend a lot of time like in a sort of secluded space editing, and you know, it's a lot of that in front of a computer screen.
Absolutely.
How would you say you balance the sort of creative expression with the technical requirements of what you do?
I think that's come with time. I think the technical aspects, for example, my university degree really focused on being very technical and very thorough. And when I first started working as a sound assistant at Twickenham, it was again all about being very technical and very thorough. And as I was going on through my career and I was progressing into Foley, I started to learn from the artists and the people that I was working with that creativity is needs to be sparked, and you have to bring that into the room, and you have to find ways of finding it. And it might be, for me, now that I have the technical know-how enough to get by, I'm not too focused on getting better and better and better and better and better. Mm-hmm. I want to be good at the technical, but I think being able to be a creative input and a person to bounce off for an artist is more important to me, because I think we get a better output if I'm engaged in the creative process mm-hmm. rather than being someone who is just like, I need to record it this most perfect way possible mm-hmm. kind of thing. I think that I don't mind if something's not recorded in the technical perfection way if the outcome is something brilliant or something amazing.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about balance then, I guess, or a little bit of...
A little bit leaning towards more of
the... more the other side,
yeah.
Would you say
I mean, maybe not at all, but have you experienced any challenges or barriers as a woman in this industry? Like, are there many women working in Foley art?
In Foley, there definitely is. Foley, I think, is the area of sound that is heavily inundated by women in a really good way, really positive way. So there's quite a lot of Foley artists that are women. Less so on the Foley mixer side and less so on the Foley editor side, but still a lot more in comparison to the sound effects and the dialogue world and the mixing world. Mm-hmm. So when I've been in Foley, I've found myself being quite... Not feeling, you know, like I'm completely at home, but it's definitely been a comfortable space. Mm-hmm. But in the sound world overall, I think there have been, you know, many challenges. When I was assisting, when I first started, there was a lot of a presumption from lots of people that I didn't know what I was doing, that I was kind of just there to tick a box. Or if they, I had it on a couple of occasions, which was a really fun thing, is where people would meet me and just presume that I was the bookings person. And presume I wasn't in a technical role.
Right.
No instant presumption that I was not someone at all technical, even though I was already asking them questions about their setup, mm-hmm. all of these things. So there's been challenges of dealing with day-to-day kind of random sexism that's mm-hmm. popped up, but I've been very lucky to not experience anything too horrendous.
I was wondering, how do you choose your projects? Is it the story, the director, genre type of project, or something else entirely?
So it's something else entirely. I am, sadly or not sadly, I am in the position of I get offered work and I take that work.
Okay.
I think Foley is, because there's so many projects out there at the moment and so few Foley studios, realistically, I work as a freelancer, but I work as part of a team at Earth Sound Post and Earth Sound Foley. And realistically, we are taking projects based on the people who are coming to us with these projects. Mm-hmm. And they sound supervisors that we like and that we want to work with and we admire their work, mm-hmm. rather than it being based on director or any other reasons, to be honest with you. I think it's, you know, someday I would really like to get to that point where I can be really selective and, mm-hmm. You know, choose based on the type of project I would like to do. But I'm not in that position at the moment. I think Foley is, because we are such a small cog in the sound machine, we're a very small but important cog. That's not to diminish what we do, but people don't come specifically to Foley studios 9 times out of 10 mm-hmm. because they want, this director wants to work with the specific Foley studio. So we work with sound supervisors who provide, you know, options to the directors of like, oh, these guys have worked on X amount of films or these types of films. They might be a suitable kind of client to provide for you for your project. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, at some point, I'd love that. Mm-hmm. But right now, we're not there yet.
We'll be right back after this very short break, and I'd be so grateful if you could give the podcast a quick follow on Instagram at Real Girls Club, where you can find future podcast episode announcements, film news, film recommendations, and lots of other fun content as well.
So you've worked on a range of major films by acclaimed directors, from Sam Mendes for 1917 to Ridley Scott in House of Gucci and The Last Duel, for example. How does the working process differentiate between these different directors and these different genres?
So 1917, I think, was quite an interesting case, because that film obviously is it's a stitched one-shot film. Mm-hmm. You know, it's meant to look like it's entirely one shot. And they were providing rushes from set really quickly down to Foley. So we were working to things that were like being shot like 2 days before, which is quite unheard of. And for us and the Foley team, there was this big focus that they wanted the Foley to be really naturalistic and not heavily stylized. It needed to sound really real. So, but it also was a case of getting the director used to these sounds that they were hearing from Foley, because when they're coming off set, this is how they're sounding on set, all of these things that he's been hearing and he's been really used to. Mm-hmm. We had to make sure that, you know, he was quite happy. So this workflow was quite like
fast-paced.
Yeah, it was fast-paced, but it was also very cooperative. So we mm-hmm. were sending them Foley quite quickly and quite, we were recording it and they were getting it quite quickly. It was all this case of getting it in so the director could hear it and the editor and the picture department could hear it and see what we were doing and see how it matched up. So that was quite a like unique workflow that we had on that film. Whereas with like House of Gucci, that was more of a like we were left to it. It just needed to sound stylized, sleek, and sexy. You know, we had 4 weeks, I think, on that shoot. No, 3 weeks to record the Foley. And I think it was like a 3 or 4 week edit. And that was very much like a, here's the brief, left to it, start delivering reels to the sound department slowly but surely. So it was very much a like, you know, almost left to it, but, you know, just go figure it out, go sort it out. And then, you know, it depends very much on the sound supervisors as well, who are working with these directors and their preference on workflow too. Uh-huh. So we might be providing to the sound supervisors like daily updates on what we're doing, or they might just want to hear it at the end of the project.
Uh-huh.
So it totally depends and varies on what the sound supervisor wants as well.
Because uh-huh. I know for like, you know, editing visually, the director is often in the editing room and giving his like input. Is that the same for Foley art, or is it very much like separate?
No, yeah, it's very separate. They, for example, directors won't, I don't think I've seen a director step foot in the Foley studio. It's just not an area that directors really lend their time to. It's such a short period of time that we're in there doing that I don't think it's ever considered as a thing necessary for them to be a participant in. And I think also you have to be quite quiet. Well, that's not necessarily any director's strong point. They've got phone calls to take here and there, you know, so I don't think it would work out. But yeah, so we might have guest appearances from sound supervisors, or we might be given a Foley supervisor, which is sometimes a thing, which is really good. And sometimes an effects editor might come into the shoot, but these are all like sporadic, potentially 10-minute visit, an hour visit, a half a day visit, but that's kind of it. We get given instructions in a sense, and given notes, and we work to them. Mm-hmm. And we ask questions as we need.
Mm-hmm. And how about music? Is that also very separate?
Music will, when we're working with a film where it's really like heavily reliant on music, we might get sent music stems, and we can balance when we're recording, playing back what we've shot. We can balance against the dialogue and the music and see where we can kind of find these moments to get some more Foley in, or where it's maybe not necessary to add our input.
Back to 1917, what sounds did you use to capture like the grit and the authenticity of the First World War?
That film was a real team effort, and we spent a lot of time thinking on how we were going to get the sound of trenches sounding as authentic as possible, because if you've seen the film, they are quite often walking around trenches, walking through these barren lands in France, and they are having, you know, like, it's such a torturous journey that they're undergoing. So one of the main things that we ended up doing was we bought a lot of different types of wood to create boards for these trenches, because they're kind of like, the way that trenches are built is you have a hole underneath it, and then there's an air gap, wood on top, and then because they're soldiers walking around, there's mud coming down from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite like a thick mud wood sound, and then quite a lot of clay to get that clagginess, that kind of sticky, horrendous like suction sound that creates a real like tension around all the footsteps. So we, biggest thing that we did was we bought a 50 kilogram bag of clay, powdered clay, and me and Oliver Ferris, who we were both assisting on that project, Oliver's now an artist, and we basically, for a few days, between the two of us, we were constantly making fresh batches of clay. And then taking out dead bits of clay that stopped making noise, that just kind of got a bit silent. So that was a really, really important job. But it was very much like a focus was to keep the freshness of what we were doing, keep this like really sticky, harsh, horrible clay that we had to work with. And then other things that we'd done, we'd bought genuine World War One webbing. So like kind of what's used to holster all the weapons together, mm-hmm. little trenching tools, all these little bits and bobs that you would kind of see kind of rattling on the soldiers as they walked.
Mm-hmm.
We had as much as possible at our disposal mm-hmm. to kind of get these kind of almost musical elements, these musical moments, these little, you know, tinkling sounds of like a canister with water in, you know, little tools that they had attached to their belts, their guns jingling, their belts, anything that they had on mm-hmm. when we were trying to create that sound of sense of size and weight to them mm-hmm. as they were walking around, mm-hmm. trudging through these muds. So yeah, it was mm-hmm. very like a focus on, because it's about the two characters, we're trying to focus on the weight and the things that they're carrying and the personal weight that they were undergoing really mm-hmm. in that story.
So from what you're saying, it actually sounds like there's quite a big element of research when you're going into doing the Foley art of a film. Like, you've got to really know at that time what things sounded like or what the objects and props and costumes sounded like.
Yeah, definitely. I think it depends on the project. It depends on the budget of the project, how much research you can do. But with 1917, obviously, that being quite a big budget film, we spent a good bit of time before thinking about how we were going to attack it, what we needed to buy, what we needed to source, what we already had. But when it's more down to, like your everyday period drama that you're doing as a TV show where we haven't mm-hmm. got the time to research it, you have to use your brain a little bit and learn, trial by fire, learn, especially in terms of shoes, bags, quite often some things can sound quite modern. Even down to paper can sound quite modern if you're doing quite a period drama that's like kind of like lots of writing and writing with fountain pens and those kind of like very scratchy sounding pens. They need to all be relatively time appropriate. It can't be more modern sounding paper. If you get kind of printer paper, it sounds very harsh and very bright and new. Mm-hmm. And it, as much as that sounds a bit silly, you will register it as sounding a little bit off when you're listening to it. So we have to definitely understand the sounds of the props that we're using and how they relate to the time period of the project that we're working on.
Or like the same might go for cars as well. Like, I guess they sound different.
Yeah, so I think with effects people, they have to think about cars based on time periods as well, because mm-hmm. engines have changed over time recently. Mm-hmm. And now especially we're in the electric world
where that you barely even hear.
Totally different.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
A very strange sort of sound, like something from Black Mirror, like zoom, like rather than a I don't know if you know that my dad used to teach me the different sounds of motorbikes, and he'd be like, well, a sports bike is cheese, 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 and Harley Davidson is potato, potato, potato. And that's how I would like remember. And I told a friend that, and they're like, you're so right, that does sound like, that's what it sounds like. Do you have like,
that's a really good way of describing it.
Do you have any like weird things like that with your colleagues where you're like making sounds with your mouth, like, oh, I want it to sound more like, are you making those sort of weird exchanges?
Definitely. So Foley definitely has its own language. I think this plays directly into what I was saying was why people think Foley is weird. Because it would be like me and the Foley artist that I'm working with a lot at the moment, Jason Swanscott, me and him have like a very like easy communication with each other. It's like, oh, we won't even finish full sentences, and he'll stop in the middle of a recording. He's like, oh, I don't like it, it's a bit doofy. And it's like, it said it so speedy, and it's doofy is the word. So it's a bit weighty.
Okay.
It sounded a bit soft. It's not sounding harsh enough, and it got enough attack to the sound. So we've got all these little words that, or sometimes it's just a knowing like, like kind of these noises that we all make. That's very much a language.
Yeah, your own vocabulary.
We've got our own vocabulary, and we can't. When I first walked into a Foley studio, I remember hearing people talk and being like, I don't know what they're talking about. And slowly but surely start to kind of pick up on it. And, when someone plays something back, you're like, yeah, that is sounding kind of a bit bright and a bit harsh. And oh, it is. Yeah. Okay. I start to get it. I think it's definitely a language that you only pick up from being in a studio, I think.
Maybe it's another stupid question, like I had one earlier, but of course on like a film where there's not a lot of sound, no, let me reformulate my question. How do you decide, okay, we're going to focus on this sound, but we're not going to focus on this? Or do you just focus on everything? Like, well, from certain perspectives, you might not hear something. I don't know if that question makes sense.
It depends very much. No, it definitely makes sense. Definitely makes sense. And it's not a stupid question at all, because it's Foley and nobody really understands it. It needs explaining.
Yeah.
And I think we have the tendency to see everything and want to make a sound for it, but it depends on the budget, as most things do, whether we can make mm-hmm. a sound for everything. So, for example, I've just finished a film in the last couple of weeks that is a really big budget feature, and on that project there was no stone left unturned, if that's the phrase.
Yeah, you basically covered every detail.
Every detail has been covered. We have gone through it to the nth degree, done things that are more sound effects-y, but we've really put our own spin on it, created something that we're really, really proud of. But that project had the time for us to do it. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to a smaller budget project, we will kind of focus on what's the important things. And, you know, in these types of projects where we haven't got as much time as we'd like, we will focus on what's primary, what's focused, what needs to be focused on to tell the story. So mm-hmm. if we've got a lot of backgrounders in a scene doing lots of things, if it was a scene in a big budget film, we'd probably do, like, if there's someone in, like, hammering and all these different elements in, like, a market, like, kind of market scene, we'd do all of those elements mm-hmm. and we'd create, like, a real soundscape mm-hmm. to give you this kind of, like, real texture. But if it's, for example, like a TV show that doesn't have that much time and we've only got 2 days to do a whole TV show in it, for example, we will just focus on our primary characters mm-hmm. and make sure they are covered and then leave the backgrounds to kind of be more of just a general soundtrack of the voices that maybe the dialogue editor would add, or maybe just a general bit of like atmosphere that the effects mm-hmm. editors would add. So it is about it's being able to judge what the project requires and balancing that against the budget.
I guess Foley art didn't even exist back in the day when films were silent, so...
Oh, exactly. Well, I think they kind of did in some way of, like, that performance aspect of, you know, the silent films. Mm-hmm. And then slowly but surely there was people performing them alongside, mm-hmm. performing Foley alongside silent films. Mm. And I think that, you know, when we've come to these next, like, the next steps of Foley, it's so important, but it was never even seen as a thing. Mm.
You've also done, may I add, award-winning work on the hit TV series Black Mirror, so that's really cool, well done for that. And I was wondering if you could discuss any techniques or approaches you'd use to maintain that balance between realism and sort of stylized and futuristic sound design that's, like, very iconic in Black Mirror.
I think that Black Mirror series was such a whirlwind, and I mean, it feels so long ago now, to be honest with you. And I was part of a team, and I was very lucky that I was the person that got the nomination, if I'm honest. But it was a team effort. And so between myself and Adam Mendes and Oliver Ferris, we all worked together and created these, like, really interesting stories through the Foley. But we didn't have very much time. It's really such a shame. The budget of those projects were really kind of quick turnaround, so we had to really fire through. So mm-hmm. there was in that same way that we've been discussing of, you know, the balance of, like, creativity versus time, mm-hmm. we had to be really quick and sharp and make those decisions. So we were making, you know, especially with the USS Callister, which is the episode that was the award-winning mm-hmm. episode, that was about creating that kind of really almost Star Trek-y sounds mm-hmm. to everything. And then with, for example, the big alien that was the big scary feature with the dangly bits from its mouth, we were, you know, like, trying to create a big scary monster. And that actually was one of the only times that a director has stepped into the studio, because they were mixing another episode next door and he was coming in wanting to add his voice to some of the Foley recordings to create this kind of, like, humanized monster sound. So that
have a cameo,
a really
there
kind of interesting element. Yeah, definitely.
What was I going to say? Another thing. Oh, yeah, because obviously Black Mirror, each episode is different. So was that, like, how did you manage that? I mean, going from one theme to another, or you just sort of adapted quite quickly?
I mean, I think because of the nature of Foley, and especially in TV, you are jumping from project to project so quickly and so frequently. Within a series, jumping from one type of genre to another, it didn't really feel like a big deal, other than not knowing, you know, like, the length of the project, because each episode varies in length, uh-huh. whereas normally in a TV series they're all kind of exactly the same length. Uh-huh. So yeah, it was a fun, but it felt like a almost familiar challenge of being like, right, okay, we're going to be doing this one today where there's a metal dog running around in Metalhead. Like, every, you know, it's, that was a fun, interesting challenge, that episode. And then jumping, you know, directly to Black Museum.
Yeah, I remember that one.
I love that episode. But Black Museum, you know, like if you, that's much more your like kind of like standard TV show in some ways for the Foley, because it's a lot of just walking around that museum, lots of little nice sounds. But yeah, you compare that to Metalhead, where you're doing a robot dog running around chasing. That is, you know, like a mad thing to be doing. Mm-hmm. But that kind of is a bit everyday in Foley, where you're doing one normal thing one day and then one absolutely chaotic thing the next day.
That's what keeps it interesting, yeah. Then it's varied.
Exactly.
What sort of tools and technologies are essential for your work, and how have they evolved over your career with AI, for example?
I mean, right now I think there's thankfully no call for AI yet, but I'm sure it will start to make an appearance at some point. But I don't think, obviously, it's not smart enough to make decisions, the decisions that we're making as a team.
Exactly, yeah.
And that kind of performance element that I don't think AI can ever match, because the performance itself is what makes Foley unique. Mm-hmm. And it's why still Foley is done to this day, even though even myself in my career, I've recorded probably every sound ever at least once, you know, like it's probably many more times than that. So even though all of these sounds exist and are recorded already, project by project, everyone always comes back to Foley because it works to have it fresh. And
oh yeah, it's got to be authentic. Yeah,
project.
Yeah,
exactly. So I think that's why AI wouldn't work. In terms of tools, the main tool for me as a mixer and an editor is Pro Tools. Uh-huh. So this is a audio editing and recording software, digital audio workstation that is like the jack of all trades. It can do anything you want it to. It's really functional. And I started learning how to use that at university. And that, at that point, it was the industry standard. And 9-10 years later, it is still the industry standard. Uh-huh. So like that is, it just is an evolving thing each year. There's new updates coming in all the time. Uh-huh. So keeping kind of up to date with Pro Tools has been a really important thing, and learning my shortcuts and being really on it, so that then when I'm recording, my workflow is really slick and really smooth. And then we use different mixing consoles and different microphones. So microphones being the biggest and most important tool as a mixer, because you can create perspective, you can bring focus, you can bring style just by selection of microphone. So understanding how microphones work and what their particular polar patterns and how they pick up sound is really important. But as I was saying before, I just want to have that knowledge and not necessarily focus too much on it. It's the creative side. So what I'm really glad about is that my technical knowledge is in there, and I don't need to focus on remembering it every time. Now it's become part of my everyday, that I just know this is how I need to do it to create these kinds of sounds. I can use this effect, for example, to bring around this sound. So it's more, you know, those microphones are a tool to create these things.
You're also experienced in location recording. So does that mean like you're going out traveling a lot, recording like outdoors?
So it's like it's more location Foley actually. So it's like recording footsteps in specific and like sound effects in specific locations. So for example, recording in castles, recording in big barren school hallways, things that can augment and be an addition to what we've recorded in the Foley stage. So location recording is to me is another asset, is a string to the bow as someone who wants to create the best Foley possible, that having these like recordings that I've done at my disposal to add into these projects, create size, create space, you know, I think it's a really interesting and really fun way to spend time, is to record in all these different locations.
Yeah, definitely. You know? I was thinking that when I was studying film a long time during studying and for a while afterwards, I just couldn't watch a film or a TV show without thinking about what was all going on behind the scenes. And I still get it now, and it's a bit frustrating. I'm like, oh, just immerse yourself in the film. And I'm wondering if for you, like, you just are listening to everything and all you can hear is the sound without watching the film.
Yeah, I think I'm a pain in the ass to watch a film with, to be honest with you. It's a force of habit, and it's also, it's not just in film, it's in everyday life. If someone walks past me with some really nice sounding shoes,
can I record that?
Off, having a, Yeah, can I have a listen? Where did you get those shoes? You know, like, it is an obsession, it's a passion, and I love filmmaking and I love Foley, and so when I'm watching a film or a TV show, I'm listening out, not necessarily to critique someone, but to listen to see what they've done and take inspiration from it. And, you know, I think because there is such a wide variety of content available at the moment, watching something, you can always hear something brand new.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean that, for example, my poor girlfriend just watches films with me and I'm like, oh interesting. Oh.
I'm just taking notes.
Watch things, for instance, with you. Yeah, taking notes and just be like, oh, okay, cool. Right, okay, I like what they did there.
Do you have any favourite films for their use of Foley and sound design? Just a couple.
There's so many. So many.
I mean, outside of your colleagues, if you want.
No, it's so hard because Foley's such a small industry that
right.
I know pretty much everybody. Do you mind if I skip that question?
You can. It's totally fine. You're not obliged to answer anything.
No, it's just purely on the sense of if someone listens to it and gets offended...
Not worth it. Okay, no worries.
It's not worth the drama.
Well, for example, I really love, and I'm sure like a lot of people, Studio Ghibli films for their use of sound.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that there's like
I have an answer.
Oh, okay.
I have an answer.
On you go.
I'm so sorry. Sorry. I've got there. Toy Story.
Ah, okay. Interesting choice. But yeah, I can see that. I'll have to listen to it. Watch it again.
That was a gateway film for me, and that because it made me realise how much I loved sound when I watched it again, because I used to watch it all the time as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it a bit later on for my dissertation. I was like, oh my god.
Did you do your dissertation on Toy Story?
I did my dissertation on animation sound.
Oh, okay. So, but like a little bit about Toy Story.
Good amount of time spent watching Toy Story, basically.
That sounds so fun.
Yes, it was. So that's probably my favourite film for use of Foley.
Good choice. Going back to Studio Ghibli, do you feel that there's like a difference between other cultures on how they approach Foley art?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think a lot of different countries have their own way of doing things and focus. And I think there's always a bit of a discussion that's mentioned when we're talking about British Foley versus American Foley. And now quite a lot of, I think there's really big outgoing of Foley coming from Germany and Poland, and there is different studios popping up over there, and we all have our very own like take on things. I think British Foley, I think, tends to sound quite gritty and natural and big, and then you have American Foley, which is really, really stylized, really like kind of in the same way that American films sound very stylized. The Foley kind of matches along with that.
Uh-huh.
And then a lot of like the Finnish and the German Foley being more kind of gentle and more, and that's not to say it's a bad thing, but more gentle and more polished sounding Foley in comparison. So I think each studio that I've heard recently has got very much a different take on how Foley is done and how it's recorded and the spaces that they record in.
Okay, I'm going to narrow down my last few questions.
No worries.
What advice would you give to aspiring Foley mixers and editors looking to break into the industry?
I think that Foley, and if you wanted to get into Foley in general, I think a willingness to learn and get yourself talking to Foley mixers, Foley editors, Foley artists. You know, we're all on social media, we're all on LinkedIn. Yeah, we're not impossible to find.
Uh-huh.
They're all very social and want to show people what we do because it is really interesting and we love it. So I think being brave and putting yourself out there for, you know, and suggesting meeting up and coming to the studios and, you know, coming and having a day in the studio, I think quite a lot of us would be really keen to get people involved and get people to see what we do, because 9 times out of 10 people don't understand what we do, so we need to
explain it.
Of us that do it. Yeah, until you've seen it done, it's really hard to understand exactly what it is. I think that would be my main thing, is to get in contact with Foley people, because we're not out of reach. And then I think for someone who specifically wanted to focus on being a mixer or an editor, I think learning Pro Tools is the most important thing, because it's the everyday tool. It's the first thing I see kind of, you know, as my day starts, I'm opening up Pro Tools and I'm working within that. And understanding workflow and understanding signal flow in Pro Tools particularly is really important.
Mm-hmm. It's like the Photoshop of sound, basically. It's like the one you have to know.
Yes, you must.
What are your future projects, and your dream projects to work on?
So future projects, I can't particularly say quite a lot of films that I've been doing in the last few months.
Hush, hush.
Annoyingly hush, hush. But they're all really exciting. I've had a really fun run of doing some really big films, and I'm moving on to some big TV shows at the moment. So that is really, really fun. And I've forgotten the second half of your question.
Your dream projects.
Dream projects. For me, a dream project would be Pixar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I would love to work on a Pixar film. Animation was something that I was so interested in, and I think working on a Pixar, who in my eyes are like so, you know, they are kind of the full founders of, you know, 3D animation, and they, what they've done and the stories that they tell are so beautiful. I'd love to be involved in part of that creative process. So yeah.
And I feel like that's all my questions. And how?
And that's perfection.
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, like, yeah, one or two minutes to go. And very lastly, I mean, you said that there's already quite a lot of women in Foley art, but how do you think the industry can continue to encourage more women to enter and thrive in the film industry overall?
I think there needs to be a push to ensure that women know that they are capable of technical skills. And I think that from a young age, women are taught that we don't need to be technical and that we aren't capable of it. And I think that's probably changing, but definitely in my experience, it was women aren't technical. That's not something we do. So I think making sure there is a push towards technical understanding and engaging in technical projects is to me is the most important thing, because when you have the confidence to know that you can do it, you will go on to succeed in doing it. And I think film, sound particularly, we always need more women, because women are providing different perspectives and different voices and different types of creativity. And I think even if Foley has got plenty of women, we still need more.
Okay, fab. I mean, yeah, we are literally less than 1 minute, so
that was amazing. Sorry, that's why I was like, I need to wrap up.
Go. Yeah, thank you so much. And it was lovely to speak to you. Really, it was so interesting and fun. So thank you very much.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of The Real Girls Club with Sophia Hardman. It was definitely one of my favourite episodes yet, and I just love how passionate and enthusiastic Sophia is about her work and about Foley art. Don't forget to follow and review this podcast, and also follow on Instagram at Real Girls Club for updates. Again, apologies about the sound and the occasional motorbike and car in the background, and I think some birds tweeting as well. I promise that will not be in the next episode. Thank you, and I'll see you soon for another episode of the podcast. Thank you.